Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When the foreclosure man comes to take my house, I'm going to change my name to Bear Stearns and call up Ben Bernanke. All right. As Wall Street reacts to the implosion of Bear Stearns and the global financial markets remain on edge, one country very closely watching events here is Ireland. Remember when the Irish used to pour into America looking for work? Today they're pouring into Soho looking for Prada. But in these uncertain financial times, can the so-called Celtic Tiger continue to roar? Right now we will look more at today's economic news as well as the Irish economic boom with David McWilliams, economist, author of The Pope's Children, The Irish Economic Triumph and the Rise of Ireland's New Elite. David, what did you call yourself to me off the air?
So a recovering investment banker. Many years ago, I worked in investment banking in London for a Swiss bank. So, and it's funny because I went through the Russian debt crisis, 1998. We ended up working in Russia, lending lots of money to Russians. And then one morning in the middle of August, I got a call from the boss. He said, I think you better get into the office. I said, why? He said, because the Russians have not only defaulted, they've put a moratorium of paying and they've devalued their currency. So, you know, when you've gone through that, you realize that this is actually the funny thing. It's broadly similar because what you have is financial markets all the time, Brian, are characterized by bubbles, by effervescence, by giddy optimism, but most importantly, by tribal behavior, where everybody wants a piece of the action. And ultimately, I think what happened here in America is like a derivative of what's happening all around the English-speaking world anywhere. We decided that our houses were large ATM machines and we could buy a house, watch it go up in value, withdraw money on that, spend it on goodies, and somebody would bail us out at the end of the day. And ultimately now, what we've have is that the English-speaking world, and I include ourselves, yourselves, Australia, the US, or the UK, have thought that the road to riches was buying and selling houses to one another using Chinese money, which is probably not the way it is. So we've got a big problem.
Unbelievable moment. You wrote on the Huffington Post last week that, quote, rather than telling the American people that they have to purge themselves after 10 years of binging, the American authorities are doing everything in their power to prevent any economic hangover, unquote. Should I guess from that you do not think the Fed did the right thing by engineering the bailout of Bear Stearns?
Well, no, you're between a rock and a hard place. I mean, the thing is, what is always, I suppose it intrigues foreigners, is that when we look, like, say, for example, most of the crises in the world tended typically over the years to come from, you know, what were regarded as emerging markets, like in Argentina and Brazil and Mexico. And the language of the United States typically during those periods is almost puritanical. It's more of, you know, purge yourself and repent. And once you have come out the far side, it's a sort of quasi-religious.
Shock therapy. All that capitalist market shock therapy.
But then when it happens in America, so on the one hand, it's kind of evangelical puritanism. When it happens in America, it gets all Catholic, right? Ben Bernanke suddenly becomes like a big red-faced parish priest on St. Patrick's Day. And everyone prostrates themselves at confession, says, dear Father Bernanke, we sinned. We didn't mean to do it. And he says, don't worry, my child. We'll give you a metaphorical four Hail Marys and a $200 billion bailout, and away you go. So it's kind of an interesting way, but of course the Fed has to come to the aid of the market. The Fed is the lender of last resource, and the serious problem now, Brian, is that we are in a situation where nobody wants to lend and nobody wants to borrow. So the Fed is ultimately the only player in town. But the downside of that for Americans and the upside for Europeans to a degree is that the fallout is in the dollar. Because the more money you print here to bail out delinquent banks,
and the lower interest rates,
the lower the dollar goes. So, you know, it's very good if you're selling, you know, Manolo Blahniks to Irish people on the Lower East Side. But long term, it's bad for America. It's unfortunately bad for America.
And I guess the other paradox that we're in is, nobody wants to see a company like Bear Stearns bailed out because they led the way in taking these kind of ridiculous risks. And to boot, they've been known as a bad corporate citizen. They didn't participate in a bailout in 1998 when other Wall Street firms rallied to stabilize in another situation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the conventional wisdom now seems to be that if the Fed did not intervene to bail out Bear Stearns, there would have been such a crisis of confidence in all of Wall Street and the banking system that it could have had much more dire consequences across the economy, reaching down into, you know, ordinary citizens around the world to a really frightening degree.
Well, you see, the thing is, Brian, you know, despite all the rhetoric, the banking system is different. And if you regard the economy as a body, the banking system is the heart that pumps credit into the extremities of the economy. So what we have here is something akin to a serious, serious heart attack in the system. And so therefore, whereas other industries are a bit like the hand and the leg and the this, that and the other, the banking system is the heart of the economic system. And therefore, what you're talking about is a combination of open heart surgery, of bypasses, and the Fed's job is to be the Surgeon General. And it's not just for America. This is the most important thing. The idea that people would have some schadenfreude about America is nonsense, because the system is so globalized now that what we see happening in the United States, it arrives over in Ireland within seconds, and it arrives in the UK and in Europe within seconds. So we're all involved in this crisis.
Irish recovering investment banker, economist, talk show host, very popular author over in Ireland, David McWilliams, my guest on WNYC. His new book is called The Pope's Children, The Irish Economic Triumph and the Rise of Ireland's New Elite. And we can take phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment. I don't know if you can do the comment in brogue, but, you know, whatever you want, at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. David, you wrote in your book that Ireland is the only EU nation that benefits more when Europe is weak and America is strong, rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Why would that be?
Well, it's funny you talk about the brogue. I'm on my best behavior. This is the best accent you can get out of me. This is the most comprehensible I've become. No,
you sound almost like you're from Kansas.
Anyway, the friend of Dorothy and all that sort of stuff. No, the thing is that Ireland, if you think about what happened in Ireland, right? Corporate America took a huge leveraged bet on Ireland in the 1990s and the last 10 years. And this is why the economy has turned around. And one is probably the main reason. And it's very simple, that the American corporations have invested twice as much in Ireland, with a population of 4.5 million, than they have done in China and India combined.
Really?
So you just think about that, right?
I did not know that.
Ireland is it's a $90 billion figure, and the investment in China and India has been half that.
So what were we betting on in Ireland?
You're betting on a combination of, one, low taxes, 10% tax rate. Two, that people like me, well, I would say that's a pretty debased currency, but people like other people who would come back home to Ireland, that basically we had this huge, big baby boom, but all of us ended up working here in restaurants, but we had like degrees and things. So when the economy took off, you had this massive labor force that wanted to work. And the third factor is that Irish productivity is the highest in the world. So it's the single most profitable location for American corporations anywhere. So Dell, Intel, Microsoft, all those guys are there. All the banks are there. We make all your Botox if you're into that. We make all your Viagra if you're feeling a little bit emasculated. So, you know, basically Ireland has
What do you mean you make all the Viagra? Aren't the U.S. pharmaceutical companies based in the U.S.?
That's the thing. No, they're not. You see, what happens is a company like Pfizer figures out, okay, if we can avail of a 10% tax rate in Ireland and have a completely free trade arrangement, but also more importantly, I think for a lot of American executives, it's not foreign. Ireland doesn't feel foreign, you know, so you can move your top brass over there and there's, you know, their kids can go to English speaking schools, etc. So there's a cultural proximity. And what they do then is they produce the Viagra. The stuff comes in at the one end and goes out of the other end in Ireland to avail of the tax. For example, you know, so where St. Patrick, on St. Patrick's Day, the big myth in Ireland is that St. Patrick banished the snakes out of Ireland, right?
Yeah.
In a place called Croke Patrick, which is a huge big mountain in County Mayo, where many people, Irish Americans, will be aware of. Underneath Croke Patrick now is the biggest Botox factory in the world. So Allergan, the new St. Patrick is banishing the lines and the creases and the worries. So it's so basically what we have become in Ireland is the 51st state economically. And that is why all the stuff that's happening this morning is of amplified magnitude to us. So we're kind of what I would say Ameropean people. We're half European, half American. We pretend to be good Europeans on the one hand and genuflect constantly to the Germans. But we're like, you know, as I said in the book, we're like a hooker.
We sleep
with two clients, okay? You know, Spitzeresque in our promiscuity, right? We have America, which pays our corporate bills, and we work for you. And we have Germany and Europe in general, which extends us easy credit. And we service both clients.
Do you trade in the euro?
Oh, yeah.
The euro is your currency?
The euro is our currency, yeah.
So you kind of... losing and benefiting at the same time.
Exactly.
When America has a problem.
When America's a problem, you see, when America's a problem, American corporations that invest in Ireland suddenly think, this is getting expensive, this place. Because number one, the costs are rising rapidly because the costs are in euro. And number two, American corporations then look around the world or look back home and say, well, why not invest back home in the United States? The other problem is that when the euro, when it rises, you get this mad situation, Brian, that the fifth largest tourist body of spending in New York City, the fifth largest spenders in New York City, are Irish. And there's only 4 million of us. So it's a situation which is very fluid, which is very, very precarious, I believe. But ultimately for us, and I've said it in the book, The Pope's Children, is that we have had a generational shift in Ireland. That for 20 generations of underachievement, we now have one or two generations of overachievement. And that should be celebrated.
Put on your headphones. We're going to take a phone call here at 212-433-WNYC. My guest on WNYC is Irish author, radio host, economist David McWilliams, author of now The Pope's Children, The Irish Economic Triumph and the Rise of Ireland's New Elite. Here on this St. Patrick's Day. This book is a number one bestseller in Ireland, by the way. Nick in Bayville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Brian, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of your show. Good morning, David.
Nick, how are you doing?
Very good. I'm from County Limerick, and I left Limerick about 20 years ago, so the number of times I've been back in the recent years, I've seen a huge transformation, which I'm really delighted to see, because the country, from a touristic point of view, has really come forth. My question is, and my observation was, the last number of times I've been there is that people are very aggressive, and they're like, it seems like they're just running and running, and they got to make the mortgage payments and the two car payments, and, you know, residing in New York area, I've seen a lot of that. But when I've been there, you know, when I grew up, you'd make eye contact, you'd speak to people, but I found that that's very much fallen away, that it's very much, as we'd say in Gaelic, Mayfain kind of society.
Well,
I don't know if that's your observation, or maybe the pendulum has swung the other way completely, and eventually it will come back to the middle.
What does that word mean, Mayfain?
Myself.
For myself, Mayfainer. Like Sinn Féin is ourselves, and Mayfain is myself. And a Mayfainer is a lad who looks after himself all the time.
And this is part of the Celtic Tiger boom, right? That it's becoming more culturally American than it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Nick, I think your observations are spot on, and most of my generation, you're the same generation as me, and most of us emigrated in the mid-80s, and a lot, whether you're coming back from America or Australia in particular, a lot of people seem to think that we have lost something as a result. There has been a cost, a large cost, and it's interesting because The Pope's Children, the book, Nick, I actually opened the American foreword in Limerick, and I write it from a hotel room in Limerick looking out over a city that, as you and I know, has been transformed beyond all recognition. But there are, I suppose there is an aggression. There's a sort of a keeping up with the Joneses carry on, you know, and it's as you said, you know, I don't see why in places like Limerick you need SUVs or you need your kids to go to private schools or you need all these things. But, you know, there's a chapter in the book which is called The Protestant Catholics. And in many ways, the sort of communitaire community looking out for each other that you describe, Nick, is more or less the old Ireland, the sort of Catholic view of it. And ultimately what we have become in a way, and it's kind of tongue in cheek, but we've become more individualistic. And that individualism is probably best defined by gated communities, which we'd never have when we were kids.
And you do write in the book that prosperity has given rise to two social classes in Ireland, what you call the Hycos and the Declanders. Who are
Yeah,
each?
Okay. Well, the Declanders, I tell you, the funniest, to basically get a handle on Ireland, what I did is I decided to, the book is mainly observations driving around the country and trying to put the whole thing together. And what was extraordinary, Ireland has typically about 350 days a year, Brian, a biblical deluge, right? It is lashing rain. It's freezing cold. And I go into the biggest DIY store in the town and I ask, what are you selling? And your man says, we're selling decks. I said, what? Decks. Outside wooden decking, right? Huh. I said, what else are you saying? He says, barbecues, right? This, I don't know when we became Afrikaners. Was it like last year or the year before? But ultimately, what you have is this extraordinary. And all in the suburbs, you are nobody if you don't have a deck, right?
Covered decks, enclosed decks.
Not enclosed, outside bleeding decks in the freezing cold, you know? And so the paddies are outside trying to pretend that we're in Connecticut. But we just got here in Massachusetts with poxy weather, right? So the problem is the decklanders is just, I would say, the more aspirational people with money in the last few years who are probably, as Nick said, a wee bit aggressive, probably buying stuff that they don't necessarily need with money they don't necessarily have, as we know. And then, of course, the old middle class get really fed up with this because they're being priced out of the market. So they throw up barriers that mere money cannot overwhelm. A mere money, just it's a distinction between the merely rich and the very posh. So the Heikos are more a fusion. When we were kids, you know, Hibernian Ireland was the Catholic Church and all this sort of stuff, and it's quite atavistic, I always believed, and a bit backward. But it was always opposed by these cosmopolitans. The cosmopolitans just thought, oh, the rest of the world is so fancy and we're so backward. And it was kind of, you were on a higher level of social evolution if you were cosmopolitan. And the battle for the heart and soul in Ireland has always been between these Hibernians and these cosmopolitans. But the interesting thing in the last few years is there's been a fusion, a synthesis of the best of Irish. So you see an explosion, for example, in Irish language schools, explosion in traditional music, in the GAA, traditional Irish games, and the cosmopolitan together. And I think it's more like the fact that 400,000 of us emigrated in the 80s.
How much of it is a kind of xenophobic reaction to the immigration rates in Ireland now? A lot of people coming from places where people don't look very
it'll
Irish.
St. Wojciech in the St. Wojciech
there, is there a backlash? Is there a backlash to that now with, you know, the new interest in traditional Irish culture among the cosmopolitans?
Yeah, I think, you know, what it is, it's basically saying to everybody, we have something to preserve. So I'm not that worried. I mean, a lot of people are worried about the Americanization and the globalization of Ireland. But what you have seen is a huge sprouting in Irish culture. Coincident with SUVs and DNKY and Manolo Blahnik. I mean, you've seen these things. So with respect, I mean, we are receiving in more immigrants per head, Brian, than any other country in the world. Ireland has absorbed in about 600,000 immigrants, which if the similar figure would be an American, you'd have an immigrant population of 38 million arriving in 5 years. So that is social change on a monumental scale.
Tom in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Tom, yes, how are you doing?
Okay. I was giving you a book by one of the Pope's children, a cousin in Cork, who just has a whole lifestyle, life that follows that Pope's children. He's now off doing his own business. I read the book in Tuscany, and I loved it. You explained everything for me. And I want to ask the question, have they reached the last paddy yet? I told them.
What does that mean?
Okay. Well, Tom, thank you very much for the kind words and the checks and the post. And I'm sure you know my... The book, what does it mean, Brian? Well, what was happening is we were having something, and Tom is very well aware of this, and absolutely your nephews and your cousins in Cork, that Ireland went on, like America, a housing boom mania, right? And this manifested itself in the extremities of the boom in people buying properties in countries they could not locate on the map not that long ago. So, for example, what you got was, we had a game when we were kids, and Tom will remember this, called Paddy Last, right? And when you're, it's a game of chasing you have in school, and the game was not to be Paddy Last. You couldn't be the last guy. Now the game in the housing market is not to be Paddy Last. The Irish are buying houses, selling them on to other Irish investors who sell them on to other Irish investors. So in a place like, for example, Bulgaria, you have an entire property market being built up with no reflection on Bulgarian economy, the Bulgarian people, whatever. It's just, Tom, as you know, paddies selling to each other. And the crucial thing is not to be Paddy Last. You don't want to be the last buyer in town. It's like you don't want to be the last guy who paid $100 for Bear Stearns stock, okay?
It's exactly the same thing.
It's exactly the same
thing. As the Bear Stearns collapse, because it was people investing in secondary, tertiary pieces of paper that represented somebody's mortgage somewhere.
Precisely. And so, Tom, I think we have reached the Paddy Last stage in Ireland. And I think the problem for us is that the Paddy Lasts were largely young couples with kids who bought in the suburbs in the last 2 or 3 years, spending €400,000 or €500,000, not dollars, on pretty average houses that are falling in value. So we're looking to the United States for both leadership on the one hand, Tom, but also to understand what is likely to manifest itself in Ireland, because the trends are broadly similar.
And you wrote on your webpage today, now that it is finally dawning on people that the slowdown in the economy is severe and might be prolonged, an Irish Plan B is necessary. What would Plan B look like?
Okay, well, Plan B, I mean, I've always been intrigued at the huge strength of the Irish diaspora, the enormous strength of the Irish abroad, particularly here in the United States, but also in Argentina, where there are 500,000 Irish Argentinians, 12% of the population, in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and of course, the biggest population in Britain across the way. And years ago, in another incarnation, when I was an investment banker, I was sent to work in Israel. So you have, you know, a guy from Dunleary goes over and lives in Ramat Gan amongst the Israelis.
And you employ some Jewish terms in your book. You write about Ireland's financial kosherism.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I suppose I lived amongst Jews for a long time, which is, I suppose, unusual for an Irish guy, particularly if you're not here in New York City.
What is Ireland's financial kosherism?
Well, if you think of, in the past, right, if you went to a Jewish house, they have kosher, so lots of things were excluded, okay? Lots of food that you could eat in the rest of the world was excluded. So an exclusive diet of particularly Jewish food, right? Now, we had an exclusive diet in the 80s of particularly Irish peculiarities. So the economy wasn't open. It was closed. We couldn't sample things. It was closed. So it struck me like a big kosher kitchen. That basically what you had is, like, Jewish kids would go all out into Brooklyn and New York City and Manhattan and see all these delectable delights. But when they came home to mom, they weren't allowed to eat it. And we were a bit like this as Irish people. We came out to the United States, sampled all these goodies and saw how the economy worked and how the rest of the world worked. But then we came home and the government said, no, you can't do that and you can't do that and you can't do that. So it was like a big kosher kitchen, an economic version. But what I was saying to you is, I remember my boss at the time, an Israeli guy, a very old gentleman, had survived all sorts of, he was a Jewish guy from Poland, so he'd survived all sorts of stuff well into his 80s, survived the Holocaust, survived the founding of the State of Israel, all that. And he did one of those, you know, those very strange Jewish actions they have, you know, and he said, David, what do you do in Ireland with your diaspora? And I said, well, we don't do enough. And he was saying that, you know, what they do in Israel is they take Jewish American kids back to Israel. They get them to spend 3 or 4 weeks in the summer. They infuse them with a sense of Judaism. They learn a wee bit of Hebrew. They go back home. So Israel is used as a global recharging battery for Jewishness. Now, I think in the future that Ireland should see the 70 million of the diaspora as our biggest sales force. And we should use our country, the homeland, as a recharging battery to recharge the Irishness of Irish Americans, to bring the kids back to Ireland, to actually have a state and an Irish
philanthropy.
Thank you. We never use it because we're not good at it. Philanthropy. And to fuse a concrete sense of Irishness. So in many ways, we use the nation state as a springboard for the whole tribe.
And on your webpage, you even talk about calling the Irish diaspora home. Are you advocating an open door policy to anyone who can prove Irish heritage, similar to Israel's right of return law?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, if you look at the world, if you look at the biggest phenomenon in the last few years, Brian, financially, has been social networking. Okay? You think about this is Facebook for the nation. It's for the willing. You don't have to coerce people. You don't have to. It's not something that's exclusive. What you basically say is that the tribe, in an era of services, we're not going to make, the Americans and the Irish are not going to end up making stuff in the future, okay? In an era of services, the most important thing is soft power, not hard power. You don't need a big military. You know, if you look at the countries who are doing very well, it's Ireland, Singapore, Hong Kong, we don't have militaries. You don't need hard power, you need soft power. Branding, networking, contacts, all these issues. And what better way?
You might want to tell Clinton, Obama, and McCain that.
Well, you know, but it's bloody self-evident. They should just open the window and have a gander. And if you look at this, Brian, what is more evocative than these ancient ancestral ties, which are real, which are absolutely real, and we could put together an extraordinary network of Irish people which would benefit both America and Ireland.
Brendan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Brian. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And to you.
Brendan, how you doing?
Good, good. I was one of the last to leave in the like mid to late 80s, just before the boom. And now that I go back and I have two younger brothers who've never understood the whole idea of being unemployed and holding a job and, you know, if God forbid you had a car, that you took care of it. And it's amazing now going back there. I feel a lot safer walking down the streets in New York than I would in Dublin or even my hometown of RD in County Louth.
Well, Brendan, you know, it's again, this is the very interesting. I mean, towards the end of the boom, which I celebrate, and I think it's a good thing, Brendan. You know, I was a bit like you. I was a dishwasher in Bleecker Street in 1988 in a place called the Red Lion, you may or may not know.
Yes,
And with a whole other bunch of Irish guys. But I think what is happening is that there is now a dawning on most of us at home that the last 10 years were a bit like a dream, a bit like a bubble. And as you said, you know, people changing their cars, I presume you're referring to your brothers changing their cars every 2 or 3 years. There is more crime on the street than there used to be in the past. But I think that in general, Brendan, it is a much better country, even for all these warts, than the country that you and I left. If you imagine what RD was like in the late 80s, I presume you can still remember it extremely well. So I think the best way to look at Ireland is a country that has gone through enormous social change in 10 years, the sort of social change that maybe the United States went through in 50 or 60 years. And we're now in a state what I would call of social indigestion. We're just trying to digest the whole thing. And there are issues that we're going to get our act together. But ultimately, I think that Brendan, it is a better place. And these problems are very solvable.
Well, New York is a better place for all the Irish people here. And David McWilliams, thank you very much for stopping by.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
To you, too. Thank you very
much. Do you try to avoid Danny Boy today?
I am going to go later on with a couple of delinquents from Brooklyn that never came home, and they're going to show me the ropes tonight.
Glass of green beer for you. David McWilliams, author of The Pope's Children, The Irish Economic Triumph and the Rise of Ireland's New Elite, published by Wiley. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will go live to Baghdad. As this week is the 5th anniversary of the start of the Iraq War, we're not going to do 5 years of history. We're going to ask, today, has the surge stalled at a stalemate? Stay with us.